My name is Anna Onishi, and I'm giving a workshop on Richness of Diversity, the Intergenerational Gap. And since there's not too many of us, let's just have a kind of a small group discussion on how you felt as a youth towards adults, and how you felt towards them as being established, and what you wanted to say to them, and what you wish that they would have listened to from you.
Gosh, I don't remember.
I think back when I was your age, we didn't have as much good interchange with older people as I sense is happening now. So, as a teenager, I seem to remember most of us were pretty good at sticking to ourselves and, not being with other people too often. Although I remember I grew up in a pastor's family, so we were always having other adults. Dad would always bring somebody home after church for Sunday dinner. So there were always other adults besides my parents at the dinner table, but I can't remember being very challenging.
I also grew up in the children to be seen and not heard generation, same kind of thing, maybe, I don't know. And the older adults would be, but I listened.
Yeah.
But mostly they talked, the first generation in America, when they talked about the old country a lot. That's how I learned fractured German, the dialect of it. And, there's not enough communication, right?
Yeah, I guess I honestly can't remember, because we were just kind of absorbed in our own activities and we didn't have family things, but...
I'm sorry about that, because you could have learned so much. When you're younger, you absorb like a sponge, and they didn't know that, or it was bad. I don't think they just didn't realize it. It was not done out of meanness, but they...
Well, it's rather interesting. We're sisters. I'm 5 years older than Jane, and I talk to my mother all the time. I could hardly wait to get home from school to tell her what happened that day. And I wrote a long letter every week from college. We didn't telephone much in those days, but every Sunday I wrote a long letter telling my mother just about everything I could think of that I did. So I had a lot of communication with my mother. A lot of it was about religion, her faith. But our father was overseas in the war during World War II, so he wasn't around so much. And he was also a different kind of person, so we didn't have such a close relationship. But I do remember coming home from college. My brother and sister were younger, and we'd sit around the dinner table and argue, especially with my dad. And the one thing that aggravated me about him was that we would have this big argument about something, and he'd say, well, what's your authority for what you say? So the next night I would come prepared, and I had my authority. So he said, okay, what's your authority? I pulled it out and said, right here. He said, well, then you can believe that if you want to. That attitude really aggravated me, but that was discussion purposes.
When I was a teenager, I don't recall a lot of communication going on between kids my age and adults, but I also, at least in my circle, don't recall it as being a big problem either. Maybe in retrospect, I would have wished more, but it was kind of a rite of passing, because the kids were with the kids and adults were with adults. Now, the other thing that you talk about having others in your family, I was an only child, and sometimes that bothered me. Mm-hmm. I think I was around adults more because of that. Mm-hmm. So my upbringing might have been just a little different in that regard. But I don't recall this being a particular problem, but there wasn't a lot of communication.
I have a sense that a lot of this changed in our country during the Vietnam War. When younger people, I think, began to be more aggressive about expressing their their views or disagreements with the older generation more than I remember doing it when I was young. And since then, you know, I think there's been more, you know, genuine discussion about issues of substance between the generations.
Well, we were known as the silent generation. You know, the McCarthy era came along and you just learned, or at least I learned, just to shut up.
Uh-huh.
Don't make waves.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. you're interested in the kinds of things we talked about politically or economically, socially,
yeah.
Rather than mm-hmm. can I have the car tonight?
No.
Because there's always that kind of
yeah. Yes. And there's always that constant tension, and so that's just to be expected. But with that tension, would you wish that there was more communication between your parents and you, like? So they would understand what you were going through? Like, can I please have a car tonight? And they say, well, no, and that's just it. Would you wish there was more room to negotiate about it? Or...
Well, the car was kind of irrelevant. Yeah, I certainly would have wished for more communication. But, and nobody, it's a kind of a thing where nobody had it and we didn't miss it. Except in retrospect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I stay out late kind of thing? In New York City, nobody had cars in the 30s, so I grew up in the mm-hmm. Depression. But there was no rebellion about it either. If you're told to be home, you're just home. You didn't get on the subway and ride downtown.
But I've had conversations with my children on all sorts of issues that I never had with my parents. You know, so I think it's been much improved and it's been helpful and sometimes frustrating, but important for us as a family that when my children were teenagers that we talked a lot about what they thought we were doing wrong, which I would never have said to my parents, and issues of international politics and moral issues and stuff.
Do you think that has to do with your ethnic background, the way that you were brought up and your attitude towards your parents?
Very much so. Yeah.
You came out of a German background? Yeah.
Austro-Hungarian, French.
A mixture, like gypsies, I call them.
Yeah. And well, our parents all came from Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were first generation German.
Yeah.
And we never hugged. Or kiss, except I suppose when we were babies and I was very small, but I don't remember that. But yet I never felt there was a lack of love either.
Oh,
I was just not the
monster. Even without expressing it, you felt that there was a lack
yeah.
of love.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I'm from, I'm half Asian, I'm half Japanese, and with my family, there is communication, but what my father says goes, no matter what.
Yeah.
And so there is room to express my views, but it doesn't really matter. Because
well, yeah, my father had that attitude, but
yeah.
nobody else in the family did, so we kind mm-hmm. of ignored him.
And
yeah.
your father is a Japanese.
Yeah, he's Japanese, and he has a very traditional sense of the family. You know, like the father should be the strong person, he should discipline, the mother should... you know, take care of the children, and she should help them through all the difficulties, and only confer to him when it is needed. But communication between the two is very frequent about the children, and my sister and I, you know, we didn't, you know, like I was always told I'm more, I won't say important, but I have more power than my sister because I'm older than she is. And my mother has more importance than I do because she's older than I am. So there's that age bracket too. And so that's just my personal background. And I feel that my ethnic background, like my mother, she's half Polish, and her father was full Polish, and he came from a very strong Eastern European country where they said, well, everything was no because they wanted to save money so they could make a better life for themselves. And so my mother, she has kind of a very negative attitude towards spending any money. And my father, who came from a very wealthy family from Japan, he's almost like, spend the money, just go ahead. And so there's that constant friction between the two also.
Yeah.
Is that like the same thing for you guys?
No, we were all poor. Everybody
was poor. We were too. So money was there. I always feel that I don't care about money because I lived without it when I was growing up, and I know you can do it. And, you know, like this sort of this village.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have plenty now, but I tend to spend it now too. That's what keeps the economy going, I think. Yeah. My son has told me this too. It's true. You know, if everybody hoards it, I mean, then nobody's going anywhere.
Well, I was taught to save for a rainy day, and
yeah,
I was always very economical and frugal. And now
rainy
it's raining.
Day,
I'm spending it.
This business about saving it for your heirs or leaving it to somebody, nobody left me anything.
But a lot of youth my age, especially from the African American community and the Hispanic community, are not getting the same communication with their parents as they would have liked, like I'm getting, and so like there a lot of crime is going on because of it. I know that that the ELCA is 98.6% white. And so that doesn't leave a lot of other ethnic backgrounds in it to explore new ideas and give new resources and direction. And I think it also has something to do with the intergenerational gap, in that some youth who are from multicultural backgrounds, they just don't feel that their upbringing can go ahead and mix with those European people.
I'm a high school teacher, and there's a lot of, I don't know what to say, there's a lot of unhappiness between Hispanics and Blacks, who are definitely the minorities in our school. It's largely white, but there are some Hispanics, there are some Blacks. And I think the emotional problems they feel, for the most part, interfere with their ability to succeed in high school. And that affects their ability to succeed in college. And things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here I am, the white Anglo-Saxon teacher with this class of kids. You know, I don't even know how to, you know, what if their learning styles are different, maybe. I don't even know how to reach them.
Mm-hmm. And so they get into a lot of trouble because there isn't that communication. Like, I heard an interesting statistic that in Newark, New Jersey, 85% of all 14 and 15-year-old Black girls have had at least one child. And when asked, they said, why do you do it? And they said, because it's someone to love. And so I felt that there wasn't a lot of love in their family and a lot of love in their upbringing. So they look towards a little child as their source of love and a reason to live and hope and prepare for the future. So, and there's a lot of crime also because, well, it can go either way, like crime or just a frustration to overthrow the older generation because they want to have their voice heard so badly, and they just don't know how to do it correctly.
People don't... children don't get recognized, and then once they do something that's drastic, then the parents will recognize them.
Pay attention to them.
Pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is this why clothing and hairstyles are often sort of outrageous to the eyes of adults? Is that one way of saying, pay attention to me? I'm gonna.
Certainly, because it's showing your individuality and your rebelling against the establishment.
Well, part of that is normal.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Because you want to be separate.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful that we don't overdo the notion that that's strictly to catch attention. It may be something to establish a separate identity there for a while. You seem to be suggesting here that maybe the communication today among generations is not as good as it seemed to start out in our discussion. But
no.
There's more openness.
I find that it is not very fluent between the generations. Like in my personal church, I'm the only my congregation is about 1,300 members, confirmed members, and but I'm the only one under probably 25 that goes to church.
Is that in Newark?
No, I'm from Washington.
Oh.
I'm from here.
State of Washington.
Yes, yeah, state of Washington. And but there's like 30 in our church youth group, but none of them come to church. And another thing was that
you go to the church youth group then.
Yeah, well, I go to both.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, also I was going to say that at my congregation, you can't vote until you turn 18, even though you aren't confirmed. And so most of the youth, you know, their voices are not being heard because they aren't 18. And, you know, even though they are confirmed and they've gone through confirmation, and that was one of their goals, and so when they didn't get it, they kind of were angry towards the church. And my church is elderly. Most of the people are retired, and they're very traditional. And tradition is good, and don't get me wrong, but I think that there needs to be some room to breathe.
Because you live in an area that's economically impacted, don't you? The population has not been growing. I was wondering if this, the fact that your church is mostly older people, is because not many families, young children, are moving into the area of staying.
My area is very scientific. It's it has the Hanford area, which was used for the Manhattan Project.
But that was closed down and put a lot of people out of work.
Uh-huh. But now all the, like at my school, I can't think of any of my friends whose parents aren't engineers or doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are very educated and they're.
This is your high school?
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the socioeconomic level is very high, but they just aren't coming to church.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the schools, they teach you that it's basically a godless society through literature and through science and through history.
Well, not only schools, like our whole society teaches.
Oh, that. Yeah.
Television movies.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think on television one time I saw a movie where people prayed in a program, a commercial program, that I can't believe this. This is the first time in a situation comedy that I have seen people actually seriously pray.
Huh.
Or even talk about anybody who's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Or go to church. Or how often have you seen the preacher portrayed in an unflattering
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the better question is, how often have you seen a preacher portrayed in a flattering way? It's almost always negative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, like in my high school, it wasn't even a question that there was, that there wasn't a God, because their parents are very scientific and they're very mathematical about everything, and so they just aren't seeing any evidence, and we look for hard evidence. And so if there isn't any, then You're not going to believe. And also that was because my high school was very abundant with different religions. Like I had friends who were Muslim and Hindu and Buddhist and Jewish also.
Sounds very much like David Gilmore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. You say that you've got a fairly large youth group.
Mm-hmm.
So they're at church, but they don't go to the worship service.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So here are people who are, I assume they're at the youth group because they're Christians and they, or is that a wrong assumption?
Well, what?
Oh, social.
Yeah, it's
they're just for the fun.
Usually just for the fun. and they go to these church, like, conventions, and they learn a lot, but then they never bring it back. I can't really blame them because almost everyone does that. Almost everyone does it.
Adults do that.
Adults do it too. Everyone does it. So, yeah. But to get away from this negative side, how would you change it if you were going to attack this problem?
I was hoping you'd give me some insight. Because we're involved, three of us are from one church, and we are at least nominally involved with youth groups. I just wanted some insight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, does anybody have any suggestions?
Well, I wanted to ask, and this is one way of getting at it, what do you think are the things that young people are most upset about or in rebellion against from our generation?
Mm-hmm.
If we know what we know more clearly what they think we're not doing well,
mm-hmm.
then we have a better angle on how to improve the relationship.
I'm only speaking from my experience, but my father was very liberal and my mother was very traditional, and a lot of youth these days, they don't want to be caught up in tradition, and they just want to, they're all for this issue, and their parents are totally against it, and they just wish that they would understand. And it's not so much of the clothing they're wearing, and that's not it. And it's not really the drugs, because drugs are just like an avenue that they go down after their communication is cut off, or teen pregnancy, but I would say that there just needs to be a lot more understanding between them. And I've always enjoyed the company of adults, actually more than the company of youth. And so that's what I've gathered. And I just feel like they shouldn't be pushed so much to grow up, and they wish they would listen to their voice because they don't feel like they're being listened to.
Make it incorporating. I guess it would probably start at the congregational level, where I know some congregations are having either both youth or young adults be that transition of being part of the church council or part of the different parts of the whatever the programs are that churches have, that they are being heard within the council or the different programs the congregation has. And I'm not sure how well synodically or regionally they have input in, but I understand that some places are having youth or younger people be ones that are in those programs, and that way that they are being able to not only learn and be part of the structure of what church is, they'll be also what we in our Native American Lutheran ministry are doing with Dennis, and that the youth and the younger generation are going to be our leaders, and we don't help mold and we help them see what our process has been
within church and the process that we are doing as a church as a whole, then we will not have a church later on in our Native American culture. Mm-hmm. Well, as an example, my congregation, I believe we have a young person on each one of the committees of the board, so that the young people are represented constitutionally there. But I don't think that any of the young people, other than perhaps the person who's serving on the board, really cares very much about you know, whether we put money into a new organ or fix the back steps of the church or give our benevolence to the local food shelf or to Bread for the World. Now, I'm not aware that the young people really want to come to a congregational meeting to talk about it or come to a board meeting and tell their representative on the board what to think.
That's true. They're very apathetic, and I think the best way to solve that is to get them involved, because or get a large number of them involved, because if a large number of them involved, then they'll be talking about it, and then they'll involve the other people in their own ways. And like, I'm on the youth board at our church, and before that I was on the board of administration and operations, and I was the first youth ever to be on an adult board, and that was just changed like probably 2 or 3 years ago. And so and they had to fight like crazy to change it.
Were you interested in that?
Oh yeah, I really wanted
to. Board of operation and whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh, but...
Were you the only youth?
Well, I've been in some organizations that didn't have much purpose, and, you know, it was hard to get members, and one thing that we always found was helpful is if we had some purpose, you know, like establishing a scholarship fund, or helping somebody who's starting a dental program for Native Americans or something like that, you know, some sort of social problem, or feeding the hungry. And so, you know, maybe some sort of group, like if you take on one, ask the youth to take one day a month to serve a meal to the homeless. There are usually some food centers that will do this. And I think if they have some sort of project like that, that they work together where they're managing the project and they see that they're doing some good for something else, that that sometimes generates enthusiasm.
Because they have to have a focus, yes.
Yeah. You mentioned, I kind of get the impression in your church, the youth in general are not allowed to serve, or...
That's right.
They shouldn't be serving. Mm-hmm. In our church, that would never be a problem.
No.
But the bigger problem is finding something to be interested in doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can see some of them attending our various meetings, and why am I here?
Especially when I have studying through the night.
Pardon? Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of adults are this way, too.
Every
adult member of a congregation
That's right.
gripped by the issues of the church. But
they seem like adult issues, though. I guess there would have to be some kind of cross-generational thing that would be of interest.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned age 18. Would some of the younger ones want to become involved in your church if they were permitted to?
Oh yeah, like a lot of them would. I know.
Well, you should fight for that.
Well, I have been. And
is your youth group consist of? Are we talking now about from 13 or 14 on up, or are you talking about 18 and up now?
I'm talking about from like 15 to 18, and there's 30. Then there's a junior high group. Which is...
So there's a junior high group.
Well, no, actually, there's a first through third, and there's like 20. And there's a fourth through six, and there's like 20 or 30 or 40. And then there's a junior high group.
Eight.
Yeah.
Nine.
No, not nine. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot. There's like 40. Then there's like 30 in the high school.
So it would be high school post-confirmation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember when I was 16... I knew that about my church, and in 2 years I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll be a member of a church maybe someplace else in the country, wherever I settle down, but, you know, don't a lot of young people just figure that in a short time they're going to be gone from this church anyway, and setting up their own life some other place, mm-hmm. and that'll be the time when they might get more involved.
Actually, the people in my youth group for the high school don't see it that way. They really do want to get involved in the church, but they're just not given a chance, and so it's really sad. But one thing that worked in our church for including the smaller children from like ages 2 to 3 to probably second grade with the high school was the Pelican Project. Have you heard of that? Okay, well, it's through the Office of Global Mission, and what it is it's a bunch of puppets, and they're pushing towards global awareness, and the children, they bring money to the Pelican Stewardship Project to help build houses in Bangladesh and water pumps and plant trees. And so we tried this at our church, and it worked really well.
And this is a project they support. They try to raise money for it.
Yes, yes. And actually, I thought it went really well because they raised $75 in a week, which I thought was a lot more than I was anticipating, because it was in vacation Bible school, and there isn't supposed to be any sort of money gathering. And so I had to send out letters to the parents saying that this is through the churchwide office in Chicago, and that it is okay to give money to this. And I would appreciate it if they would, because it's for a good cause. And so it really went over well. And I can pass these pictures around. And yeah, and I'm president of the Eastern Washington and Idaho Synod. And so I had like 4 or 5 in my house, and I was supposed to distribute them to the congregations that wanted them. And I had just gotten them. So we use 3 or 4, depending on the day. And it just went really well with more.
You did a puppet show with the Pelican.
Mm-hmm. It was talking about how they all wanted to save money to help the people in Bangladesh, and eventually they bought, I think, 4 water pumps and like 15 trees for the people.
So your older youth group did this for the young kids?
Yeah, for vacation Bible school.
And this is something that they enjoy doing.
Oh yeah.
I'm not worried about the younger ones yet.
Yeah.
But the older ones working.
I was surprised because they really went for it. They really did, and they kind of enjoyed the younger kids' company. They got to know all their names and.
I'll hear another puppet too.
Yeah, and another thing.
Can any of them teach Sunday school classes? Not that far.
Yes, they do, but those people are mainly like 6th and 7th graders who teach Sunday school. Actually,
teaching.
What?
The 6th and 7th graders do the teaching.
No, actually, they help teach.
They help.
Which means they just basically pass out pencils.
So high school age, don't get involved, let's say, with the 3, 4, 5 year olds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing for different multicultural people, youth, is the event called MILE. And that's every 3 years there's a national gathering, and this year it's going to be next summer it's going to be in Atlanta. And before that there are 2 events. One is called MILE and the other one is called DALE. And MILE is a multicultural youth leadership event, and it's where basically all the multicultural youth get together and they learn about each other, and they express their feelings. And DALE is a differently abled youth leadership event, and it's basically the same thing. And then also, I belong to the Association of Asians for the ELCA, and I was just actually appointed as a chairman of the youth. And so, And I was really surprised because I was the only youth there, except for another girl. And all the rest were adults. And I don't know if it's like the youth don't want to get involved, but I have a feeling that they might, but they're just not given the chance to get involved.
Well, but go back to his question about like high school students mm-hmm. teaching Sunday school classes. Is it that the high school students aren't interested, or that they're not allowed to?
Well, they're not interested now because they're not allowed to. And there's just, I mean, they just kind of know that that's never going to happen. But, at this particular time. But what they're going to start doing next year is they're going to start learning about different religions and going to different churches. Like, I think they're going to go to like a Mormon church and then a Catholic church and
is
then
this the
a Buddhist.
Youth group, or is this a Sunday school class?
Actually, it's a Sunday school class for the high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've been wanting to do this for probably 3 or 4 years. But we just got a new pastor. And he's young. He's like in his late 30s. And so he's very open towards that. And our former pastor, he would actually. This is true. He would actually get the youth stuff in the mail that was addressed to him, and he'd rip it up. So it would never get to us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Who provides the leadership for your youth group? You have.
We have a full-time youth youth mm-hmm. worker. Actually, before the person we have now, we had a reverend, and he just helped us. He was our quote-unquote youth pastor, mm-hmm. and then now we just have like an interim, he's an interim youth lay person.
Mm-hmm. And how long will he be there?
His contract is up until, it is good until December 31st.
And how long, when did he come? I mean,
he came like, he came like in February.
It's a 1 year thing?
Yeah, but we found a new pastor, and he'll probably stay. He'll probably be hired again, mm-hmm. but he's really good.
It's not a lot of continuity.
No.
And there's that.
Actually, before this, before he came, we had like 8 people in our youth group. So.
Getting an improvement.
Yeah.
We use a little different model for our counselors. We have. It's all volunteer, nobody's paid. But we try to have at least 6, 7, or 8 counselors. Some graduate students maybe at the university, young couples, some older people, and some maybe just in college, just starting. And the counselors meet as a group once a month.
Mm-hmm.
It varies depending on how many kids and how active they want to be, how involved the kids are in the planning. We try to get the kids involved in the planning with a counselor, just making sure it goes. And no counselor then is overwhelmed by having to do everything. You know, there's a group who is split mm-hmm. the responsibility, but we have a group of people who are interested in the kids. The other thing I think that's good about it is that the kids feel there is a group of adults who care about kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one professional youth person while everybody else stays the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, before the person we have now, we had an elderly lady. She was 65 in charge of the youth, and she didn't really want to do anything with us. She just wanted to do like the administrative part. She was also an intern, but then she had to leave because she developed cancer. So, so the person we have now, he's 35. He doesn't really act 35, I think. He's more youthful, and he's not married. And he's not married, which is different. And so it's like his whole life
maybe
is.
Maybe I'm not a girl.
Actually, we do. And so his whole life is kind of devoted to rebuilding the program, which is nice.
Is he a full-time employee?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That would be a nice luxury. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I do think a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing that we can do to like change the way that I feel the gap between the generations is to have communication and also education of what they learned, because I know that the older generation has a lot of wisdom to share to the younger generation, and we have a lot of new insights to provide to them. But the older generation has been through it, has been through a lot, so they've seen many things. But at the same time, I think you should listen to the young people. Yeah. And we have to, and I know that like most of you here are German. Well, are of German, no?
No. And then Norwegian.
Well, Scandinavian.
Just don't happen to be German.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
European, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And another thing is to involve people of different cultures, because then you learn a lot. Like, I know at my church, I'm the only, there's only one other family who's Asian, and then the rest are, like, Europeans. And I know that they feel that they wish that there was more of them, so they could have a lot, a voice, more of a voice than they do now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the best ways for congregations to make, say congregations that mm-hmm. are mostly Northern European, Anglo-Saxon, to make their worship a place where others are comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's just hard to walk in. You know, if mm-hmm. white people are a minority in a black place, you know, most of us don't feel comfortable walking into a virtually all black congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand why Asians or blacks in Pullman, Washington might feel uncomfortable in a congregation that's mostly
black. Well, one way is in their worship services is to be more like here at Holden. They encourage political correctness.
They encourage political correctness?
Well, yeah, I think so, to a certain extent. You do. Like, you don't... Yeah, I think so. And like, of all different cultures, and I know, like, at my church, they have, like, sing-alongs that are Norwegian hymns in Norwegian. So,
So do it because it seemed to be the thing to do, but it doesn't have a lot of impact. Is that what you're saying? You said political correctness.
Term. Well, no. I mean, I think they just. Well, I remember like one day, or just anything different. Like one day, we had a jazz band come in, and they like gave us like a bunch of hymns that were like jazzed up. Our church was just like kind of hopping around for like a month after. So this needs to be shaken up, I think. Like we only have a youth service once a year. And I would like to see more than that. And that's at Easter at sunrise. So how many people go to this? How many people go at 6 o'clock in the morning on Easter?
Keep them out of sight.
Yeah. And actually, they have two different budgets. They have the youth budget and they have the church budget. So, yeah, I think that there needs to be a lot more integration of the two. And I keep going to church, and there's like these groups. There's like the young people, there's like the middle aged, there's like the people who are older.
When you say there's two budgets, you mean the youth there's a regular budget and they give money to the youth budget, or is the youth budget totally separate and they raise their own?
Yeah. Well, it's like a combination of both, because the youth get money from the overall church, but we weren't even getting like 1%, because our budget is like $350,000 a year. And until like probably 3 or 4 years ago, we were getting less than $1,000, and then we just had to raise money on our own. So we were constantly doing fundraisers, and the church really gets tired of fundraisers, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one time we sold pizzas, and we made pizzas, and we sold 600 pizzas, and people were just sick of them after that, because they just didn't want to see no more pizzas, and I'm sure the adults were too. I mean, and they should be, I think, because they're constantly handing out money to the youth to make their own, I mean, to have their own budget. So there is a definite chasm, I think, at least in my church, between the older generation and the younger generation. And I wish it would be closed, or at least come together a little closer.
You know, the workshop I went to yesterday on racism, one of the things that people pointed out is that we can't afford to wait until society in general changes, and mm-hmm. there's not much we can do to change society in general. What we have to do is at the local level, at the personal level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think we hold back here, well, you know, what I can do as an individual isn't going to make much difference, but that's really all we can do.
Yeah. I was told once that you put your hands out straight, and this area is an entire extent of what you can change in the world. Yeah. It's right here. So, and also I was told that if you go down to the river, and you drop a small little pebble in there, that's and you drop a pin in there, that's the impact you have on the world. And so
I know.
But
One of the latest things in mathematics is chaos.
Yes.
And the idea that a
butterfly theory
wing in one side of the world causes thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm. So I truly believe that you have to start at the personal level and at the grassroots, and then it will start to go up from there, and there will become a change.
Well, also in history, look at Martin Luther. One person can make it.
Mm-hmm.
No, one person can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, getting back to what you were saying, yes, I don't think you can wait for society to change. Because society will change once a large number of people have changed individually.
Right, yeah.
So, and the zeitgeist of the period also will change. You know, if there is changes made on the personal level, in a personal relationships. So I think there has to be a lot of cross-cultural meetings and a lot of intergenerational meetings. What emerges?
Well, I think that did happen in the 60s and early 70s, over the mm-hmm. largely over the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
Because the mood of the country toward that war changed over a period of 8 or 10 years, mm-hmm. and I attribute a lot of that to the young people who kept saying, you know, we won't go, we don't agree with this. Parents finally changing their minds about the war, largely, for many of them anyway, I think, because the young people in their family just wouldn't settle for the status quo. So it was the accumulative effect, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just talking to those who are next to them, and
has that stopped? Has that slowed down? Because obviously something isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Or we wouldn't be having sessions like this, being concerned about it.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's not as apparent as it was in the Vietnam. But there is that undertow, that underpainting, that it is there. And of course you can see it through crime. Like why, well actually, a lot of adults commit crimes, but why do they always focus on the youth? We do. and they always focus upon the, especially the minority youth who do. So through the media and through just basically talking, you form stereotypes. Those stereotypes have to be broken. And you have to listen to the people, listen to the sacred. Yeah. So all I can say is you have to encourage communication. And one book that really does a good job of it, I think, is this book right here. It's in the bookstore. And it's basically talking about small groups and the group building experience and how you build personal relationships with all people and how you can communicate on a spiritual and very, very deep level. And I thought this was a really good book, so I recommend.
Is that, you know, the central office, that book? Or
this is actually published by the same person who did the Serendipity Bibles.
Okay.
And I don't know.
It's not Lutheran, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, actually.
I don't think it's a Lutheran publisher.
No, oh, okay. No, it isn't. I'm trying to think if it's the same person who wrote the Serendipity books. Like in those children's books. I think it is. And it's good stuff.
So it's a resource.
This is a definite resource. Okay. And then I have some stuff here that you can look at, like the youth. We have newsletters, of course, we're like once a year, but we have newsletters and we have different sermon events that we can do. Like we have, like right here is a multiculturalism, and like across the border to Mexico and to the Far East countries, and then they have like the Habitat for Humanity, which is a very good project on the domestic and international level. And they have environment, ones like with ones in Alaska, where they teach Bible studies to the people on the islands, the Eskimos. And then they just have some miscellaneous ones. And over the years, like this is even, I think, 2 years old. And they're actually, I have a thing that's like that thick of just youth servant projects. And so there is that yearning to help people from the youth, but they just want to know about it more. They should be told.
I've been having problems the last few years getting kids to do, we've encouraged them to select one of those certain things and work toward them and do it. And we haven't had much luck the last 3 years. You know, youth groups change.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They've all changed. A few years ago, they were very into that, but now.
Well, it's just also the chemistry of a group and who's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a small group.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I know that, like, in my church youth group, before, like, with 8 people, they were a different bunch than the people who are in it now. Like, the girls, they wouldn't do any physical hard work because they didn't want to sweat. I mean, seriously, they said, I don't want to sweat. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not even, hiking's out of the question.
Right.
I mean, they don't want to ride their bikes. They don't want to go down to the store, just like walk there, like 2 blocks away, and carry this stuff back. They just don't want to do anything. And the group we have now, they're not really into extracurricular activities, but they are willing to like work with their hands. And we are doing a service project every month in our church youth group. Like we've gone to the soup kitchens, and we've served them, and then we've gone to the older people's homes, so like the Lutheran home, and we do that. We just do like a lot of stuff, and I think it also opens their eyes, because I remember hearing from one of my friends who is an officer in the Synod, and she went down to the Santa Clara Western States Convention. See, I was going into, I was going in 10th grade, so that was like 3 years ago. And I guess she got stuck with the Servant of Rent project that she was really glad she did, because she went to a nursing home and she met the former Mr. Universe, the bodybuilder. But he was gone mentally, and he was all small and emaciated, and it was just a real humbling experience to know that this is what happens, you know, to you, or it can happen to you, and that we're all mortal. We all change.